Of course, thanks also for pointing out the differences between an advanced economy and the, rather dynamic growth-oriented economies like India, which might require some tweaking in the various policies. And it is also, good to note that our TFP is very high compared to the advanced economies, and that gives us, that tells us that we can afford more inflation. And obviously, we have to target an inflation which is a lot more than the advanced economies. And I'm sure people in the, position to manage things are listening to you on calibrating their responses properly. And of course, the last is a very serious matter. Measurement of various things is not that much in India correct or appropriate. In fact, it is perhaps one of the rare countries which have advanced estimates, advanced revised estimates, estimates, and then the second estimates and first estimates. I mean, I don't know how many, such estimates are there. I don't think this kind of thing happens in many other economies. Thank you so much. And what we will do is we will take one question from the audience because they are our prime customers. We'll begin with them and then I'll go on to Lokeshwari ji. Any question? I can't see any question here
There's no
on my
questions here.
panel.
We have got a lot of questions online.
Okay, well, you can start with
Yes, sir. And then one of the questions has come, what you just now spoke about it, sir. It's a question from Shankar from Chennai. Based on your work with leading national statistical committees, what improvements in India's data and statistical infrastructure are most critical for enhancing the quality of monetary and microeconomics policy making, sir, in your perception?
Well, let me be very clear. We have to take our data gathering and data generation. Because data you have to generate estimates of inflation, you have to generate estimates of the GDP, you have to generate the estimates of consumption, you have to generate the estimates of investment, savings, and so many other things. Please note, it is an industry in itself. Right now, it is all in the public sector. And the government is doing this job in a meticulous way, trying to adhere to the international standards and trying to do that. However, we are lacking in certain kind of certain kind of seriousness about it. The data, for instance, is not mandated to be provided in a timely fashion. As a result, what happens is that the agencies which are responsible with doing these things are not in a position to get these things. I mean, Kumar Swamy said that, there are so many different kind of advance estimates and first revised estimates and second revised estimates and so on and so forth. This happens because the responses come very late and there is nothing, no mandated things are there. So it is all free for all. People provide this information at their will. And when they default, then nothing happens. This is one important concern that I have. As a participants, I think we have to be also responsible. Number two, I think there are serious efforts to update the base year. Unfortunately, the base year was supposed to be revised from 11-12 to 16-17. But 16-17 was a year where there were serious kind of changes, like severance and demonetization occurred, and the introduction of the GST occurred. As a result, the system got destabilized. You cannot have selected 16-17 or 17-18 as the base year at all, because it would not have represented anything. 1920 was supposed to be another year, but then you had COVID. And COVID destabilized the whole thing for 2 years. Therefore, now we are stuck with 2022-23, and that is exactly the base we are now trying to do, because we are trying to find out whether it is 2022-23 is the right year or 2023-24 is the right year. That is the reason why. But we are doing it. Now, unfortunate part is, these things are very special to India, And we cannot ask the IMF to make any exception for a country. A country cannot have the exception. They will give the rating, but they will make observations. And they have made the observation that otherwise the things are good. Except this problem of the Bayesian revision. So Bayesian revision is a serious issue. If I were in IMF, I would have pointed out this basic inconsistency between inflation measurement and growth measurement. And I would have punished the country for this. Unfortunately, IMF has not done that. IMF has not raised this issue. They should have raised this issue.
Thank you, sir.
Now, Lokeshwari ji.
Very, very interesting and enriching discussion, Dr. Dholakia. Thank you so much. I'd like to ask you that since 2017, when the flexible inflation targeting regime was introduced in the country, 16. The inflation 16, yeah. So inflation has been rather under control. The volatility has kind of come down is what we have been observing, maybe because of other reasons as well. And most central banks are now talking mainly about price stability rather than growth. They go first after price stability. But now you're saying that, but given all these, the way the problems with the whole, the structure of this FIT regime itself, you're saying it's better to look at growth. So what are the changes that you suggest that should be done? But do you think FIT is a good idea? Should we continue with it? But what changes need to be done so that we can go forward with it? Because it seems to be helping the country, isn't it, in some way?
Absolutely, absolutely. So on the face of it, I would say FIT is not a bad thing at all for the country. In fact, it was a very, very important economic policy reform that the IMF and World Bank both recognized at that time as the second most relevant reform after GST. So they said the GST introduction was the most relevant reform. The second reform was inflation targeting, flexible inflation targeting. And that is how we were rated higher in terms of the economic policy reforms and all that. This is important. I am not against inflation targeting in that sense of the term. But as I said, what you need to do is put all the four targets together, work out a synchronized, collaborative kind of an effort to set different targets for different purposes. I think you cannot have 8% growth with 4% inflation. It is impossible. With the remaining two, the fiscal deficit and the CAD target, to be around 2-2.5% and fiscal deficit around 6%, you cannot have the target of 4% inflation to achieve 8% rate of growth, out of question. Now, if you do these things, you are destabilizing the system. I mean, who is going to listen to that? The unfortunate part is that when you do the data analysis, the data analysis is based on the wrong measurements. So even that is not helping you. With the wrong measurements, my estimate of threshold inflation was turning out to be 5.4%. If I correct for the measurement, very back on the envelope kind of a thing, then it will turn out to be around 4.8% inflation. Correct? But that is the type of target that I would. So if I have to now revise the inflation targeting, which is due in March 2026, it will be revised again. But at that time, again, we'll be talking about the bandwagon that, you know, if I change the target, I'll lose the customers and investment. That is not the concern. The concern is what is the right kind of target? The right kind of target for me, I would rather say, rather than a target, I would put a band. Of a small band, 4 to 5% is the inflation target, with a tolerance band of 3 to 6%. So if you are asking me what would I do under these circumstances, this is what I would do.
Let me give precedence to...
I'm not sure.
Do you have any...
Yeah.
We
No,
got
no, no. That's enough. Thank you so much.
let me give precedence to Dr. Charan Singh now.
Dr. Charan Singh, you can unmute yourself and put on the video. Yes, sir. Thank you. Go ahead, sir. You can unmute, please. Yes.
Listening to Dr. Dalekia, always a pleasure. A clear, absolutely clear strategy, a very clear thought. Dr. Dalekia, I totally support your view, except a minor tweak. The inflation target regime is now totally for review. If we are, and you are so correct in mentioning achieving a 8% to 8.5% potential growth that we have, we'll never be able to achieve with the 4% target. You are so correct. My thought was this Viksit Bharat has been introduced by the Prime Minister only by 2025. Now, though he has been talking about it for about a year, the inflation target predates this. And inflation target, as you rightly mentioned, was celebrated by the IMF. And anything which is celebrated by the IMF, I'm not always sure is good for us. Right? So my view would be, and going by your own research and going by my own little research, I would say 5 to 7% inflation target, the band, would be better because you found in your research the threshold level of 5.5%. And I looked at a 30-year average and found that 6% is where the inflation galvanizes. In a young demographic India, with only 20-year window available to do whatever we want to do with our young demographic, we don't have too long a time. IMF has been here for 75 years, will be there for next 75 years. We'll please the IMF after 2047 that we have come back to your inflation target of 2% or 3%. But I think right now, our focus should be our youth. And we cannot strangulate growth. Now, quite a bit, I understand people here understand economics. My understanding is we have already done sacrifice ratio of 3% per year. That's not what we can afford. We cannot afford for the next 20 years. We are just lucky that our former governor is now the Prime Minister's advisor. If we are able to convince him that, well, there is nothing to be excited or thrilled by saying our inflation is 0.25%. We are not a stagnant developed economy. There's nothing to be thrilled with it. I don't mind if everybody gets a job, but my inflation is 6%. Even that is a tolerable band. Just wanted to add this. And Professor Dholakia, I'm sure you are going to agree with that observation. Thank you so much. I'll agree with a very, very clear caveat that, I have been talking about remeasuring the inflation in a correct way. The moment you remeasure the inflation in a correct way, 6% will not sound 6%, 5.5% will not sound 5.5%. It will turn out to be around 4.8% or something like that. And that is why I'm saying that the inflation target in a properly measured context is 4 to 5%, and the band, tolerance band of 3 to 6% is a reasonable thing. If you exceed that band, nobody is going to hang you, but you cannot exceed that band for a long period of time, more than 3 quarters or something like that. I think that is a reasonable way of doing it. To come out of the inflation targeting right now will be disastrous. Because unfortunately, the market participants don't understand economics, sir. Had they understood the economics, this would not have been the case at all. I mean, you can't expect the dollar to become stronger. What is their economy? What is happening to the American economy and whatever surrounds the dollar? So nothing supports that. Nothing supports that. And you have exactly the opposite thing. We are facing the music in terms of the financial non-stability on account of the sharp depreciation. Sir, why? In fact, all the basic fundamentals show that our rupee is likely to appreciate in the longer run. And longer run is not very loud, very long run. It is going to be 3 to 4 years. Sir, is the market participants, are the market participants understanding any of these things? I have very serious questions on that. Because market participants depend on doing the homework with the rating agencies. And rating agencies are not doing their homework. Let me tell you this.
Sir, I think the questions so far have been surrounding the main area which was announced. I would like to go a little further now. One of the aspects of financial stability as of now is the quality of reserves. As you know, the India has about nearly 85% of reserves in dollar, Aussie dollar, yen, and euro. All of them are mouthpieces of dollar, if I can call it. They are not different. If US says everybody will, you know, do whatever they want. Isn't it a huge risk in that sense that, you know, if US does what it has done, US and Europe, you know, what they have done to Russia, they freeze our reserves, then what happens to us? You know, there will be a huge instability. Of course,
go ahead.
Yeah, of course, Russia has now retaliated. If you freeze our 300 billion, I will freeze your 1 trillion of investments, private investments in Russia. And he has taken the measures and he has already got it passed, I think, through his whatever is a local forum of parliament. That is fantastic. But I think I'm going beyond a point which I had made in the opening remarks. Is dollar itself worth it? Will they be in a position to, you know, even raise, you know, enough dollars to repay their own, you know, maturing debts? In fact, I am told that they are even crawling at the feet of Venezuela now to supply them, you know, cheap oil. This is the, you know, development in the last 1 week to 10 days. So if that is the case, if U.S. will find it difficult to raise that two, 2.5 or maybe even 3 trillion of deficits for their own use, what is going to be the future of dollar itself? That is my question. The entire 564 out of that, rather about 660, 567 out of that 668 is, I'm counting out the SDRs, is in, you know, currencies. Is, you know, Reserve Bank, you know, doing anything about it and, you know, a calibrated way so as to remove this disturbance is my question.
See. It's a good question. Your observations are reasonably valid. In fact, I would say that the dollar weaknesses are very clear. They are apparent and they are coming forth day by day. In fact, every day there is a new revelation about the weaknesses of the dollar and the American economy. I think there is some kind of a bite which is in circulation in the social media. Very, very, very many people must have watched that also, that there is a history and there are cycles about the dominance of a currency. Dollar has dominated the world currency for a long time, but now it is almost on the verge of completing its average period. That means that And fortunately or unfortunately, the weaknesses have started coming out. I mean, just as in the past, other currencies were dominating the world and their weaknesses came out and they had to give way to the other currencies. Right now also, dollar has the same kind of things coming out. And my clear cut, I mean, I fully agree with you that dollar has serious weaknesses. As far as the unilateral decisions of derecognizing the reserves and freezing the reserves, etc., I think, you know, with all the insanity that the American leadership is showing, I think this is far too insane thing to do. And I don't think that people will be doing that. I mean, don't equate ourselves with Russia. We are very democratic. We are very different kind of country. It is not authoritarian in any sense of the term. And it is very difficult for anybody to freeze this kind of assets. It is impossible. As far as what RBI has been doing, if you want to see, please look at the things yourself. You will see that the gold reserves are slowly and gradually are rising. Obviously, they should rise because of the simple reason that there are uncertainties about dollar. But the unfortunate part is we cannot completely delink. We are trying to ensure what RBI is also doing is we are trying to ensure that rupee gets accepted as the medium of exchange in several other kind of trade relations. If that happens, automatically we are taking the necessary recourse. I think that is something which we need to keep in mind.
Sir, next is a question in, through the media from one Ms. Malvika. Sir, I have a question. Given the uneven burden of inflation across diverse income groups and regions, how should monetary policies and fiscal policies be coordinated to mitigate distributional harms while also preserving macroeconomic stability?
Excellent. Please note that monetary policy is not expected to talk about the inequalities. You are referring essentially to the inequalities. The unequal burdens, which are supposedly shown through the differing interest, inflation rates, that is a different ballgame altogether. But please understand and note, we have done some research on this. And I think Piketty has done a lot of research on this inequality question. And what we have found is, using his own data, using his own thing for the Indian economy over the period of time, we are showing that inequalities have nothing to do with the growth on one hand and inflation on the other hand. That means higher inflation leads to higher inequality is a wrong thing. Higher growth leads to higher inequality is a wrong thing. Higher growth leads to lower inequality, again, is not supported. Higher inflation leading to lower inequality, again, is not supported. That means that inequality and growth are very different, distinct things. Now, please understand, monetary policy is not the means to address the inequality issues. Inequalities are better addressed directly by the fiscal policy. And that is what is being done of late. After 2022-23, in fact, after COVID, you find that the inequalities in India have sharply fallen because there is a lot of free food and other things which are being targetedly given. And this has worked. I think, so please understand that this differing inflation rate across different items is not the concern that can be handled effectively by the Reserve Bank of India or RBI for monetary policy. There is no way of doing it. There is no theoretical framework or no theoretical way.
Lokeshwari ji, you had some question about the public debt and the instability it can create.
Yeah, but I thought I'll ask rather something on the exchange rate.
Okay,
change my mind.
Yeah.
Staying with the rupee and all that.
Yeah.
So you said that exchange rate is used to control the money supply in a theoretical format and so on. But rupee, if we see over the last 20 years, it's depreciating most of the time. Like annual average depreciation of rupee over 20 years is 5% annually. And last 10 years is 3.5%. It keeps falling. And last 10 years, only 1 year it is appreciated. And the RBI stated policy is that it will only intervene to contain the volatility in the rupee. That's what they keep saying every time we ask them this question. So what exactly, is there some unstated kind of a policy that they are more comfortable with a depreciating rupee rather than appreciating rupee? Is there, or is it is because it's happening because what you're saying, because of the problems in the way they're going about the monetary policy itself? Is the rupee depreciation an outcome of that?
No, No, it is not an outcome of the monetary policy at all. Because, right now the rupee is depreciating. I mean, it's a very surprising thing and very, in a way, inexplicable kind of a thing. Why is it depreciating? Just because of the expectations, nothing more than that. There are wrong things which are being emphasized by people in a wrong way. Like, say, for instance, there was a huge media coverage and everything regarding the Trump tariff. Now, what is the exact implication? What are the exact things? RBI itself has studied this question thoroughly. And what it talks about? It says that with all the things happening, the impact of Trump tariff will be hardly 20 basis point negative, okay, on the growth. On the other hand, the positive effect of the GST reforms, okay, will be in the range of 50 to 60 basis point. I mean, rather than emphasizing these matters, people are unduly focusing. Every day you start the TV, you start any other thing, and people talk about what the new dream that Trump has seen after waking up in the morning. And it is only those news items which are, I mean, it is creating a sort of a panic. I don't know whether the market participants are intelligent enough to discount some of these kind of panics. I don't know. I start having doubts about the intelligence of some of our very big market players. Because, again, the market is in India. Unfortunately, it is not a perfect market. It is far from perfect market. And you know that it can be manipulated. So I am not too sure. I will not give credence to the short-run kind of fluctuations, because short-run fluctuations you cannot address by any policies. Policies are meant for long-term. Policies are meant for providing the guidance. Policies are meant to really provide a long-term path. I think the short-term fluctuations and short-term things are better left to the market. There is
So,
no
what are the
reason that.
basis on which you said rupee should appreciate in the next 3 to 4 years?
Because our growth rate has been phenomenal in spite of the fact, suppose 8.2% you don't believe, don't worry. 7% you believe, right? 7% versus 2%, you can see the difference. Now, this difference is largely in terms of productivity growth. So that means that our inflation rate of something in the range of 4, 4.5%, right? And their inflation rate right now is around 3%. It is not 2% anymore. It is 3%. Now, what do you expect? You expect that, there should be an appreciation over a longer period by at least 3 to 4%. It doesn't happen because of various reasons. And people start focusing on the current account deficit, the imports growing faster, exports are lagging, and things like that. I think it is all a short-term phenomenon. It's all we are managing at a different level. It is not RBI which is managing, it's the government which is managing. Because these are not in the hands of RBI to promote exports or to compete with the imports and promote the domestic production. These are not RBI matter at all.
Captain, next two, three
Yes, sir.
questions
We
from the
have
audience.
490 viewers. A number of questions come. We've got another 7, 8 minutes, sir. I'll try and excuse me and ask many questions as possible. We have a question for Ravi Kumar from Coimbatore. How should India's monetary policy framework evolve to better absorb the global shocks such as commodity price volatility, geopolitical uncertainties, and rapid financial tightening in advanced economies without compromising the growth momentums?
It is extremely difficult to compromise, to not to compromise the growth momentum. If you want to not compromise the growth momentum, You will have to absorb these shocks by the market rather than do any positive, proactive things.
Good, sir. Next question is from Mr. Francis from Hyderabad. He says, with gold price hitting record high and influencing the domestic markets, how should India view gold as a safe haven asset and driver of external sector pressures? Can monetary policy meaningfully address these fluctuations?
The gold prices fluctuations cannot be, I mean, any commodity for that matter, cannot be, a specific commodity prices are not in the realm of the RBI. RBI is supposed to be talking about the general price level, general commodities and other things. I think these are all the specific item-wise prices fluctuations, and that should be left to the market in a way. I think, again, I am telling you, if for the price of gold anything has to be done, it is by the government in the fiscal policy, not in the monetary policy. This is not the way.
Mr. Ravi, again from Chennai, he says, given the current inflation trajectory and the growth outlook, what key factors should guide future repo rate decisions? How does the RBI balance the trade-off between supporting growth and containing inflation?
Very good. I think the because you know you are specifically asking for how does the RBI do all these all such things. Well, without divulging the further details, I can only broadly say that there is a very good framework which is available by the Taylor's rule. The Taylor's rule suggests that if the inflation is lower than the target, then the monetary policy needs to be more relaxed. It is an easy money policy. Similarly, if the growth rate is well above the trend rate or the potential rate of growth, then the monetary policy needs to be tightened. Unfortunately, there are controversies about what is the potential rate of growth. Rangarajan and many other economists, very very serious and senior economists, have been talking about the potential rate of growth to be around 7.5 to 8% in India. I am no exception. I am also talking about that. But some statistical measures show that the potential rate of growth is around 6.8% to 7%. That is a statistical jugglery. It doesn't talk about the ground realities. The ground reality is that India has a potential rate of growth of around 8% without igniting the inflation.
The next question is from Mr. Murthy from Bangalore, sir. In what ways do increasing fiscal pressures such as higher government borrowing or subsidies limit the RBI monetary policy effectiveness, and how can better fiscal monetary coordination can be achieved?
Fiscal policies are the ones which are essentially, considering the subsidies and the tax issues, and that should really be left to them. The RBI is only supposed to follow the broader kind of framework where is the fiscal policy more accommodative and more easy, or is it a tight fiscal policy? I think the tight fiscal policy or the easy fiscal policy is to be seen in terms of the absolute, not relative, absolute fiscal deficits is a single kind of a parameter which is workable. It is not theoretically correct, but I mean workable. So if there is a fiscal deficit which is larger than before, then it is a more relaxed policy. If the fiscal deficit is the lower in absolute terms, then it is a tighter fiscal policy. That is
okay, one last Captain, question. One last question to you, sir. From then there is also one question addressed to Mr. Kumarasamy and also Lokeshwari. The last question is, how important is stable foreign investment flow for maintaining rupee stability? What policy measures beyond monetary policy could support these objectives?
Very good question. In fact, what it says is, how how far it, the external flows are important for financial stability in the country where it is very high. Although the on margin, the magnitude is seems to be small as compared to the domestic economy, on margin, if you see, it is a very substantial flow. Therefore, if the flows are in, inflows are very, very large, all of a sudden, you have the problem of domestic financial stability. And if the flows are very low, again, you have opposite kind of the problem of financial instability. To maintain a constant and consistent flow is important, therefore. Now, in order to do that, the RBI is typically talking in terms of its repo rate adjustment vis-a-vis the world, vis-a-vis the US and the other things, that what is their repo rate and what is our repo rate, because we should not provide a disincentive. Unfortunate part is that the interest rate parity has the country-specific risk factor, which is added. Say, for instance, if the US rate is 4% and our rate is 6%, 2% or maybe 2.5% becomes the risk factor for India. Can anybody explain to me what is the risk factor? And does it, does it justify a 2.5% type of a factor? Sir, are we that poor in terms of the economy? Is our stability not there? Is our performance not there? Then what is that? It is only because the rating agencies are giving us BBB and BBB plus. Whereas US, with all the blunders on earth, they get A, double A and things like that. Sir, why should that happen? Why should that happen? If it is a forward-looking thing, then look at the forward thing. Sir, is there any possibility at all for the US debt to come down? On the other hand, India, the public debt, that, you know, debt GDP ratio has been consistently coming down after a hike during the COVID period. COVID period was not within our control, but thereafter, it has been significantly coming down. So, what is the future trajectory, sir? That is the reason why I'm a bit disappointed by the rating agencies on one hand and our own people interpreting those things on the other hand. And anyway, the foreign investors are very clear, sir. If they are the portfolio investors, they are the fair weather friends. If they are the FDI investors, the real investors, they are the ones whom we should really worry about. And my only concern is that we are offering the best kind of environment for any permanent friends, which means the FDI. This is the best destination right now in the world.
Excellent, sir. One last question, a quick response from one Lokeshwari, one for Kumaraswamy. Here's a question from Sri Kumar to Lokeshwari. Monetary policy decisions can become complex and technical. What role does a responsible financial journalism play in shaping public understanding and expectations around inflation, interest rates, and financial stability? Just know what Professor Dalaki also mentioned about it. Go ahead, madam.
Yeah, I think it's up to us to really explain it in a simpler form that the media, that the common people can understand. I know that some of them is very complex. Even we cannot understand. We try our best to listen to people like Dr. Dholakia to understand it, and we do our best. I have suggested to the RBI itself also that why can't they put out explainers, you know, maybe in regional languages also, maybe do short videos. Because I think in the RBI, you have so many people who are so intelligent and you have a very good workforce. So, sir, maybe you can put it across to them, you know, to even educate us or even train the media. RBI should be doing that. You know? Yeah.
I'll take this suggestion very positively. I'll try to do something. Thank you.
Thank you.
Here's a question to Chairman Kumaraswamy, sir. From your experience observing communities across India, what behavioral or structural factor do you believe are underestimated in the current understanding of inflation and household financial stress? Do
I have
you
no
know?
answer to this complicated question, but I would answer an analogous question. First of all, there is no monolithic inflation figure which is going to work for everybody. That's for sure. Inflation in Madurai will not be inflation in Chennai, and it will not be in Agra. That's for sure. So how it affects each different class is going to be further. Going to be very, very fragmented. In fact, I was to ask a professor one question about pensioners' inflation index. In fact, you look at the pensioners like me, we have a roof over our head, so housing inflation doesn't really concern me. After work, I've stopped traveling. So, I mean, day-to-day travel to office, so no fuel inflation for me. Food nowadays, the second or the third, if any of the restaurants threaten a second or third roti, I run away from the table itself. That is, the consumption is more governed by need to control weight and, dieting, etc. Main the thing which is affected by inflation is only the medical expenses. So far, I've been, lucky there, but that will concern all this one. If one of the arguments given for high and low inflation is pensioners' interest versus employment or beginners, I mean, people looking for, jobs. Is it not time to construct a pensioners index and use that as the basis? At least give a weightage. I'm not saying that 100% weightage should be given. Give a due weightage to that inflation as well as the headline inflation or the GDP deflator, if it has to be corrected, as the basis for monetary policy and fixation of the central targets rather than currently, I mean, the 4%. The way it is justified, I'm not very, satisfied or convinced, but that's a matter for a different day. So that's the answer I can give at this stage to the rather complicated question for me here.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. I think we have really run out of time. And thank you, Ms. Dholakia, for the outstanding, great insights. It's so inspiring. We are only feeling disappointed why we have come to the end of the program. We could have carried on for some more time to understand more. And also, thank you, Mr. Kumaraswamy, for facilitating Mr.